Hi, and welcome to Module 7 of SQL Server for Oracle DBAs. In this module, we will discuss SQL Server installation, configuration, and basic administration tasks. I will walk you through the installation wizard and show you the installation process and the steps involved in configuring your server, as well as creating your first user database. So let's first talk about the planning and preparatory steps for the SQL Server environment, what it is that you should know before you start the installation. And then we will talk about all the other steps that are needed in order to make your SQL Server, your new SQL Server instance usable and create and configure your new user database. Before you start installing SQL Server 2012, you should probably take a few preparatory steps and make sure that you know up front what it is that you want to install. So you should plan for which version, which SQL Server edition you will be installing, where do you want to place the files, where do you want to place your databases, what will be the naming conventions that you use, what options you would like to use, what capacity do you need for that server? So essentially, what kind of task this server will perform, how many users there will be, so that you can buy the right size hardware. Where are you going to run using local storage or network-attached storage, or if you're going to run the SQL Server natively or in virtual environment. So all those options and possibilities you should consider and essentially know exactly what kind of server and for what purpose you want to build before you even start the installation process. So it is very important to do the appropriate planning and preparation before starting the installation process. Once you know what you want to install and how big a server you will need, you should probably make sure that you get the right hardware, that you get the right operating system, that you join the operating system to the domain, that everything is configured, that you get the storage appropriately configured, and then you will be ready to start the actual installation process. Once you installed your SQL Server, and I will demonstrate that installation in just a few moments, you will need to configure that server, both in terms of security options as well as the network configuration. So you should choose the right set of protocols that will be used to connect to that server. The TCP port, for instance, that might be needed. All the network environment should be properly configured to allow your clients to connect to that database and instance. In many cases, you will also need to perform client configuration and make sure that you get the right protocols enabled on your client machines for your SQL Server native client. These are the most important steps that are needed in order for your server to be usable once it's installed. So let's take a look at the process of installing SQL Server 2012. Now, as you probably know, SQL Server 2012 comes in many different editions. All the different editions, both 64 and 32-bit, actually come as a single DVD or DVD image. So from the same image, you can install any edition of SQL Server in both 64 as well as 32-bit versions. The edition that you will be installing depends on the product license key provided during the installation process. Let me show you how we install a new SQL Server Developer Edition. So, with the SQL Server 2012 DVD available on my server, I will start the setup process, which will launch the SQL Server 2012 Installation Center. And with the SQL Server Installation Center open, I can perform planning steps, so review requirements and security and setup documentation. I can run upgrade advisory for in case of an upgrade, basically make sure that I'm ready for installation. But I know I'm ready for installation, so I would like to start the actual installation process. I can either perform a standalone installation, or I could perform a failover cluster installation. In this case, I will be installing a new standalone standalone instance of SQL Server 2012. The SQL Server 2012 setup has started, and it's checking whether my machine is ready to install SQL Server, if all the prerequisites are met. As you can see, all the prerequisites are met, so we can start the actual installation process. I'm going to skip product updates in this case and just continue with the installation. So it is now installing setup files that are needed to bootstrap the setup process. So once the setup files were installed, the actual SQL Server 2012 setup started. And the first step is checking support rules, making sure that there are no compatibility issues for SQL Server 2012. I got one warning that I can ignore. The warning has to do with the fact that my virtual machine has no internet access at the moment. I'm going to click next, and the next step I need to choose what kind of installation I want to perform. I could either add features to one of the existing instances of SQL Server 2012 that I have on my machine, and I have two instances already installed with various sets of features. So one instance has only SQL Server Engine, whether the other one also has some other components installed. But I'm going to perform a new installation, so I'm going to create a new instance of SQL Server 2012 on this machine. Now I have to either specify a product key or specify one of the free editions, such as Evaluation or Express, but I do have a product key, and this key will give me SQL Server Developer Edition. So depending on the installation key that you provide, you get a different version of SQL Server installed, all from the same media. I have to accept the license terms, click Next. Now, what kind of setup it should be? I'm going to be installing Database Engine, so I choose SQL Server Feature Installation. Now I have to choose the features I would like to install. So I'm going to install just the database engine services, so just the relational database without analysis services or reporting services. I click Next. The setup has verified installation rules, and now I can proceed to instance configuration. So now I get to choose whether I want to install a named instance or a default instance. So let's say I'm going to name my instance instance 03, since I already have instance 01 and instance 02 installed. I guess that would be the logical next step. The instance root directory is in C program files, Microsoft SQL Server. So this will be the name for the directory containing the binary files for that instance. Now the setup process is verifying disk space requirements. We have 167 megabytes required on the system drives and 864 megabytes required in the instance directory that I specified. And the next step is server configuration. So choosing the configuration of various services. Now I can choose what service accounts my SQL Server services will be running on. And I can, of course, I could use the suggested default, or I can use my already created SQL exec account. That SQL exec account is a local account that I created especially to run SQL Server services. I have to specify the password. I'm going to choose the automatic startup type for SQL Server agent. And in the next step, I can choose collation, which is essentially the code page and the sorting level for this SQL Server instance. I'm going to leave it at default, which is Latin 1 general code page, case insensitive. Next, database engine configuration. I can choose the authentication mode, so whether SQL Server will be using only Windows authentication mode or also SQL Server authentication in mixed mode. And I can choose who's going to be the default set of SQL Server administrators. So I'm going to add the current user, which is the administrator account on this machine. On the next step, I can choose data directories where I would like to put the data files for this instance. I'm going to put them on the E drive. So my data files will be under MS SQL 11 instance 03 MS SQL data. That will be the default default data and log file directory for this instance. I leave the file stream feature disabled for now. Click Next. Whether I would like to send report errors, error reports, I'm sorry, to Microsoft. Checking the configuration rules again, making sure that everything is fine. Ready to install. This is the summary of what's going to be installed and where, and how my database engine will be configured. And I can click install, and the installation process will start. The installation process will take a few minutes, so we're going to cut it short and skip to when the installation process is complete. So as you can see, the installation process has completed successfully, and my new database engine instance is now installed. I can close the setup process and close the installation center and proceed to configure my newly installed SQL Server instance. So for that, I'm going to open SQL Server Configuration Manager. You can see that the SQL Server instance 03 that I just installed is already running, and so is the SQL Server agent for that instance. And the next logical step would be to, of course, configure the protocols for my instance 03. By default, after you install developer edition of SQL Server, the only network protocol that is enabled is shared memory, which, as we already know, is a local-only protocol. So if I wanted to access this server over the network, I would need to enable the TCP/IP protocol. And that change will take effect after my instance is restarted. So I'm going to restart this instance. And now this instance is also available using TCP/IP, using a dynamic port 49256. So let's now access this newly installed instance using Management Studio. So I'm going to connect to this instance using Management Studio and perform configuration from Management Studio. So I'm connecting to instance 03. I can connect using Windows Authentication as administrator because this account has been configured as the default system administrator account for that instance. If I click on the properties, the server properties dialog is open, and I can see that it's a SQL Server Developer 64-bit edition, which version it is running, what is the server collation, etc., etc. And I can proceed to configure, for instance, the amount of memory it should be using. So let's say I'm going to configure it to use only 2 gigabytes of memory as the maximum server memory. Whether it should use all the processors, since I only have one processor in this machine, I'm going to leave this configuration at default. And under Advanced, I'm going to specify that this installation should have a higher cost threshold for parallelism, let's say 50, so that parallel queries are only run for very large queries. And I'm going to optimize this instance for ad hoc workloads, which means that there is a lot of ad hoc queries being executed against this instance, and therefore I would like the execution plans for those queries only to be cached upon second execution and not first time the query is executed. So that with this I have fully usable SQL Server installation. So in this demonstration, you've seen the process of installing and configuring a new instance of SQL Server. Of course, in reality, the installation process takes a while, so we've made some shortcuts there, but I'm sure the walkthrough through the setup process will help you in planning your own installations in the future. So once we have the SQL Server installed, you have to remember that you can have multiple installations and multiple instances of SQL Server on one server machine. So you can have one default instance, so-called default unnamed instance. That instance is identified by the server name. So basically the machine name, the Windows machine name, identifies the default instance on that machine. You can also have up to 50 named instances where you can create instances that have additional name, so they are identified by the server name and the instance name. And that's exactly what I've done in my demo. I created a third named instance on my machine. Once you created your instance, installed it, you will probably want to configure it by using the Management Studio and Configuration Manager. So remember to configure your, especially your network protocols. There are certain configuration parameters that you don't typically have to change. Many of the configuration parameters work well with the default values or are self-tuning. So you don't have to change many of the configuration parameters unless you do something special or something extreme with that particular instance. The default values work for most of the typical workloads that you can experience on SQL Server. So now let's move to creating databases on our newly created SQL Server instance. A database name has the same rules as identifiers inside the database. So the database name can be up to 128 Unicode characters, and the database name is by default is case insensitive. Although it might be case sensitive if your instance is installed using a case sensitive collation. The database owner is the login account on the server level or on the instance level that owns that particular database. That account will generally map to a DBO user inside that database. The same goes for a schema owner. A schema owner is a database user account within a database that owns a particular schema. Database configuration involves setting certain configuration options on the database using either alter database or SPDB options setting or syntax. The options can be generally classified as certain auto options, such as auto close and auto shrink, auto create statistics, and auto update statistics. Those auto options should not generally be changed, so you should leave them at default, especially avoid enabling auto shrink and auto close, as it can have some very bad performance effects on your database. And auto create and auto update statistics are also options that should be left at their default enabled state. Cursor options control the cursor behavior within the database, so how your cursors will behave when created in that database. Recovery options, so setting the recovery model, full, bulk locked, or simple, will govern how transaction log works and what information is retained in the transaction log, and will affect your backup and restore options. We will discuss the recovery models when we talk about backup and recovery in one of the later modules. SQL options also control certain ANSI standard behaviors inside the database. And then finally, you have state options that control whether your database is online or offline, whether it's read-only or read-write, whether it's a single user or multi-user. Now let's talk about database maintenance operations. Basic information about the database and its state can be obtained using sphelpdb. So by running sphelpdb system stored procedure, you can gather basic information about the configuration and state of your database. Typical SQL Server operations for database maintenance are shrinking the database, which is equivalent of shrinking all the files in the table space in the Oracle database. Keep in mind that shrinking database should be generally avoided unless there is a very good reason to perform that type of operation. The reason for that is that shrinking a database moves the data within the database files in order to empty the end of the file so it can be truncated. That can result in very heavy index fragmentation. So unless you have a very good reason and have to reclaim disk space, you should probably avoid shrinking databases unnecessarily. It's a very I/O intensive operation that can leave your database badly fragmented. So it's probably better to leave some empty space in the database rather than pay the performance penalty for that. Changing default file group is equivalent of changing the default table space in Oracle. So you can assign which of your file groups, if you have more than one, should be the default one. So if you create new user objects, where they should be placed. Of course, the default file group is the primary file group where all your system tables reside. So if you want to separate your system tables from your user tables into separate file groups, you would create a new file group and indicate that file group as a default. Another possible database maintenance operation is detaching and attaching databases, which is similar to transporting table spaces in Oracle. However, in SQL Server, you cannot detach and attach individual file groups, like you can with the table spaces in with the transportable table spaces in Oracle. You always detach and attach the entire database with the whole set of file groups and files. But using detach and attach, you can move the database between instances of SQL Server or across machines. So you can detach on one instance and attach that same exact database, the same set of files, on another instance of SQL Server. You can also change database name if needed. You can change the database owner if required. Changing a database owner does not have its equivalent in Oracle, because in Oracle, with one instance per one database per instance, the owner of the database is essentially the sysadmin. In SQL Server, since we have multiple databases per instance, each of those databases can be owned by a different login on that instance. Now, the data dictionary, or in other words, system catalog, is the metadata that is available on your SQL Server instance. Data dictionary in SQL Server is decentralized and kind of can be divided into two areas. One are objects that exist in a particular database, and basically schema for each database is contained within that database. Another are any instance-level objects. Instance-level objects are created and stored in the master database. So master database has all the configuration and all the instance-level or server-level object definitions, whether your each database will have its own set of system tables storing schema and metadata for that particular database. That way, each database is self-contained and can be moved across instances. Part of the system catalog is information schema views. Information schema is an ANSI standard way of querying for database metadata, and can be also found in Oracle. SQL Server has a number of different catalog views that can be used to retrieve system catalog, with the most basic being, of course, sys.objects, and a number of more specialized system catalog views available as well. There is also a number of system stored procedures available in SQL Server. The number counts in hundreds. They can be generally divided into categories related to various functionality within SQL Server. So there is a separate set of system stored procedures for managing replication. There's a separate set for managing security, another set for managing full text search, etc., etc. So depending on what it is that, on which component you want to work with or which component you want to configure, you will use one of those categories. I'm not going to name all those stored procedures here because the list is very long. So now I would like to demonstrate creating a new database and setting certain configuration parameters on a newly created database on my freshly installed SQL Server instance. So I have my instance 03 installed, and I would like to create a user database there and configure certain options on that database. So with my instance 03, no user databases existing yet. Of course, the standard set of four system databases present. I'm going to create a new database. I'm going to use a GUI. Let's call my database test with the default owner. So by default, the owner is the account that creates a database. So in this case, it's going to be the administrator with a first data file called test. Let's make it 300 megabytes. and a log file of maybe 100 megabytes. I have to specify what is the auto growth. So I would like my database to grow by 100 megabytes at a time if it has to auto grow the data file. And I'm going to leave the files in their default location, which is where all the system files are located. So if I click OK, my database is created, and the files for my database were put in MS SQL 11 instance 03 data. Right here is my newly created database. I'm going to click on the properties of this database, and we can see that the owner of the database is my administrator account, since that's the account I was logged as when I created the database. And I can now change certain options. So one of the options I would like to change is I would like to change the recovery model from full to simple. And I would like to change the parameterization option of my database to forced. And maybe I would like to also make my database read-only. Oh, it's an empty database, but say I want this database to be read-only. And to change the database properties in this case, because I'm changing the state of the database and making it read-only, it has to close all the connections to this database. So any SQL Server connection that is currently connected to that particular database will be forcefully closed. And SQL Server is asking whether I would like to proceed with that. I'll say yes. And now you can see that my database state has been changed to read-only. So this is how I can change the options on my database. So in this short and simple demo, you have seen how to create a new user database and change certain configuration parameters of that database. So in this module, we have discussed the SQL Server installation process and the preparation steps required for SQL Server installation. We've discussed configuration of a newly created SQL Server instance, as well as creation and configuration of a user database. In the next module, we will discuss server monitoring and resource monitoring on the instance level. Thanks for watching.